LGBTQ issues are not immigration. They are not guns. They're not race. They are their own sort of cultural issue. And so far, Republicans who have used them to try to curry favor with different voting groups, different demographics, have not been successful.
I'm Eugene Daniels, and today on Political Dispatch, a group of social conservatives wants the president to speak out against transgender rights to boost his sagging poll numbers. But some Trump advisors think that would torpedo the president's chances with voters. Gabby Orr covers the White House for Politico.
Yeah.
I mean, which is like a small beat. Nothing ever happens. Mm. There's no drama. There's no backstabbing there. Nothing to be done.
Not at all.
So, Gabby, this article that you wrote and it published last week kind of talks about this really interesting culture war that's happening and the push and pull on the Republican side about it. And you start that article talking about Terry Schilling and these wrestling ads that started popping up in Kentucky. For people who haven't seen the ad, kind of explain to people what it is.
So it's important, first of all, to give a little bit of context on who Terry Schilling is in order to understand why he's even running ads. So Schilling is a prominent conservative activist who really has this contrarian philosophy that social issues are the things that win elections for Republicans, not the business and tax economic issues that you hear a lot of Republicans wanting President Trump and down ballot candidates to focus on. And so back last year during the Kentucky governor's race, Matt Bevin, who obviously ended up losing, he was in a tight race with Andy Beshear, his Democratic opponent, and Schilling decided to get involved and try to look for ways that he thought he could peel off suburban women, centrist independents, conservative Democrats, voters who might have been on the fence about supporting Bevin, but hadn't necessarily decided to support Beshear yet. And one of the issues that he zeroed in on that he thought would actually have an impact on these voters is the idea of transgender women or transgender men competing in sex-segregated or sex-specific sports. And so he tested this in a number of focus groups, he did polling on it, and then his group, the American Principles Project, decided to run a bunch of ads. And one of the ads, as you mentioned, it focused on a wrestling match between two high school girls.
All any athlete wants is a fair shot in competition.
And, you know, at one point in the ad, one of the girls is suddenly wrestling a boy.
But what if the rules change?
And the ad says that this is what would happen if Andy Beshear became governor of Kentucky. And then it asks viewers whether they consider this fair.
Beshear calls this equality. But is it fair?
And it's definitely an exaggerated interpretation of Title IX sports policies and trans-inclusive sports policies, but it's one that Schilling thought would be effective in getting those voters.
He really seems to think that's a winning strategy for Republicans, but did that work in the Kentucky governor's race?
So interestingly enough, everybody who watched that race on election night would say that it didn't work because Matt Bevin lost to Andy Beshear. But Schilling is convinced that his strategy was extremely successful. And the reason for that is APP did kind of a post-mortem after the Kentucky election. And they found, at least according to their data, that they reduced Bevin's margin of defeat by 13,000 votes. So on election day, if they had not run these scandalous ads, Matt Bevin would have potentially lost by 31,000 votes. And what he ended up losing by was a little over 5,000. And that's something that Schilling completely takes credit for.
It's an interesting idea, taking credit for something that there's no way to prove whether it happened. And Schilling has dug into kind of a deeper issue, and this issue we're talking about that's not just specific to Kentucky, right? Whether using anti-transgender platforms is a winning strategy or kind of a death knell for Republicans, right? Like whether or not this cultural war on this specific issue is something that they should be doing all over the country, maybe that even President Trump should be doing in, you know, his 2020 race against Joe Biden. How does the White House feel about this right now?
Right. So what Schilling wants to do is essentially nationalize this strategy, turn it into a wedge issue that Republicans, including President Trump, can use to their advantage in 2020. And as you mentioned, I mean, there are a number of opponents of this strategy inside the White House, inside the administration, inside the Republican National Committee. And then, of course, there are candidates themselves who want to stay as far away as possible from LGBTQ plus issues because they feel like the Republican Party has already lost that culture war, that this is sort of a final suicide mission if they end up digging into transgender issues. And, you know, those folks include everybody from Jared Kushner, who's essentially the de facto manager of the president's reelection campaign and, of course, a senior White House advisor, to Chris Christie, the New Jersey governor who ran against President Trump in the 2016 election and has been encouraging him to focus more and more on addressing the serious crisis before us right now in terms of coronavirus and not to sort of veer into these third rail issues, wedge issues that have backfired on Republicans before.
Yeah. And they have backfired very publicly and obviously in different states, right? I think of the North Carolina bathroom ban, right? Where, that was a huge fight for Republicans. And now North Carolina has a Democratic governor, right? And it would seem that didn't exactly work. So what are some other recent examples?
I mean, North Carolina, you pointed to it. That's the best example that you can get when it comes to Republicans using anti-transgender issues to try and win elections. Pat McCrory was the incumbent Republican governor at the time of North Carolina's infamous bathroom ban. This was a law that tried to designate public restroom use based only on one's biological sex, which would have obviously forced transgender individuals to use restrooms that didn't align with their gender identities. And he received a lot of pushback for that within members of his own party. But he also cost his state millions of dollars in tourist revenue because of all of the boycotts occurred in response to this policy. So, I mean, in every sort of way, it backfired. McCrory ended up losing re-election to Democrat Roy Cooper. And he is just one of the most visible examples on the political right of a conservative Republican who tried to use this issue, thinking that it would resonate with voters, that it would sort of get him suburban appeal. And it didn't go the way that he expected it to.
What's funny and interesting about this North Carolina example is when it came up in the 2016 primary, the Republican primary, then candidate Donald Trump basically said, you know, transgender people can use whatever bathroom they want at my hotels, right? So he kind of came out against it. Where is he now? Does he have like a true north when it comes to these kinds of issues?
Yeah, I mean, that was such an interesting moment during the 2016 race. I've been covering Trump for 5 years now, and so I remember that pretty clearly.
Oh my God, bless you and your lack of sleep.
Yeah, seriously. But it was so fascinating because almost every other candidate in the Republican primary at that point has said that they agreed with the North Carolina bathroom law. And then the president was asked in the context of Caitlyn Jenner using a restroom at Trump Tower, would he let her use the restroom that aligned with her gender identity? And the president said, of course, why not? And he didn't really see the issue. And he got a lot of flack for it. I remember Ted Cruz came out and said, you know, is this really the Republican that conservatives want to elect for president? So it kind of backfired on him. And it was really one of the most important markers of where the president stands when it comes to not only transgender policies, but also LGBTQ policies. He doesn't have a true north on these issues. In fact, he's kind of all over the place. If you go back to the days when he was the owner of the Miss Universe organization, he reversed a ban on a transgender contestant who had sought to compete in the Canadian version of Miss Universe. But then, of course, one of the first policies that he issued when he was elected president after his inauguration was the ban on transgender military personnel. Another thing that I just found really interesting was his campaign is currently selling Pride merchandise, ball caps, t-shirts that say Make America Great Again and are listed explicitly as Pride merchandise. But we just came up on the 3-year anniversary of the transgender military ban, and the president and the White House have been asked if they've considered revising it or reversing it, and they say no.
It seems like, with all of this evidence that anti-transgender strategy in an election doesn't work, and that Republicans feel like they have lost the culture war for LGBTQ plus issues, right? In so many ways, you know, you lose sponsors, you lose revenue to your state, you also lose voters, right? Young voters, we know, are much more likely to support LGBTQ issues. That includes conservative young conservative voters, and it makes it harder to fundraise. So who does seem to support this kind of anti-transgender strategy? Who is shilling, and people who want this kind of thing to happen? Who what's their audience?
So it's a lot of socially conservative organizations, groups that have the president's ear, that are extremely cozy with the White House and have sat in listening sessions on these issues and constantly try to get the president to sort of wade deeper into the culture wars. And, you know, just to play devil's advocate for a second, because I think if you ask them, why do you think this is a winning issue when, as you just said, the polling shows that even Republicans are beginning to move away from a lot of the anti-LGBT positions that they had previously held. They would say, well, this is a president that won his election in 2016 on culture war issues. He should continue to lean into that. The big question, though, is this the right wedge issue for him to lean into? And, you know, I think as you read through my story, you'll get a really good sense of how, again, this has backfired on Republicans before. LGBTQ issues are not immigration. They are not guns. They're not race. They are their own sort of cultural issue. And so far, Republicans who have used them to try to curry favor with different voting groups, different demographics, have not been successful.
It seems like right now, President Trump, and has for months, been really looking for something to invigorate his base. For the November election, they've been throwing a lot of things at the wall. They're really hoping that Bernie Sanders was going to be the nominee so they can just go with Democrats or socialists. That didn't happen. You have Joe Biden. The ways that he's trying to attack Joe Biden don't seem to be sticking. Is this the issue that President Trump needs to lean into? Do you get the sense that that's something that would help invigorate his base and make them show up to the polls and maybe even beyond his base?
You know, I think if you look at the polling and where his base stands on issues like this, they're really split. You know, on the one hand, you have people like Donald Trump Jr., the president's eldest son, saying that this is transgender athletes are something that the president should pay attention to. And there are quite a few people inside his own cabinet who have already addressed these issues with policy proposals and regulations and rules. On the other hand, there are a lot of people inside the Republican Party, a lot of people inside the president's base who are sort of live and let live Republicans. I spoke with Jennifer Williams, who was the first transgender Republican delegate to attend the GOP convention back in 2016. And she said that this is a really dangerous betrayal of the core tenets of conservatism, which are, you know, Christian principles, loving thy neighbor, and also individual liberty and freedom. And, you know, who is the government to get involved and say schools can't receive funding if they're allowing transgender students to participate in segregated sports? Who is the government to say that transgender children cannot, you know, undergo treatments, gender-affirming treatments, with the express permission of their parents and their doctors? And so there's a lot of Republicans who disagree with the approach, the philosophy that Schilling adheres to. But, you know, Schilling and others would say that there are just as many Republicans who really viscerally oppose these issues. They viscerally oppose having transgender women compete in high school girls sporting events, and they think that that will resonate with suburban women or centrist independents. I can't say whether or not it's going to work. Based on the evidence, based on what happened in Kentucky and in North Carolina, I think it's an uphill battle for people like Terry Schilling and his sort of like-minded conservatives. But and it's also, you know, just as much an uphill battle to get the president to actually pay attention to this issue, because so far he hasn't, despite a lot of people in his orbit talking about it. So it will be really interesting to see if this is something that President Trump latches onto, because he is in a moment right now, as you said, where he could use all the help he can get. He's trailing in the polls against Joe Biden. He's tried different issues out, defending Confederate monuments, criticizing the anti-racism protesters. That hasn't seemed to work. It hasn't rescued his poll numbers. And so this could be something that he sees and latches onto, but only time will tell.
Yeah, because his campaign seems to have started to lean into protecting suburban, you know, the suburban way of life and like the suburban dream.
He had a lot of strange tweets about that earlier this week.
Yeah, very interesting tweets about that, and specifically trying to speak to suburban white women who, you know, may have been turned off by a lot of the things we've seen over the last, you know, 4 years. Really, based on the evidence, like we've been saying, it doesn't really feel like this is the one that all of a sudden suburban white women are going to be like, you know what, never mind. Actually, I'm good with this.
It's also a strategy that's rooted in trying to shore up his base at the same time.
Right.
You know, his base is primarily made up of religious conservatives, white evangelicals, and presumably this would be an issue that they would gravitate towards if the president did. The big question is, by shooting for those voters, trying to energize his base, does he alienate precisely the demographics that he's trying to get in order to win re-election, which is, as you mentioned, suburban women, white college-educated voters, et cetera.
When you think about your article, and we want people to read every single word.
It's a long one.
What's the biggest takeaway from this issue and this article that you wrote and everything that you've heard? And also, will we see more strategies similar to this closer to November? Are you getting any sense that this is going to continue?
I think two major takeaways, and they both sort of answer your questions. Number one, just the massive gulf that exists on this issue inside the Republican Party, I think, is really emblematic of a split that is happening in the GOP and that has been happening for a while now. It's not just on transgender issues. It's on cultural issues. It's on using wedge issues like immigration, guns, race, things that get a lot of Republican politicians in trouble when they talk about them. This is just the latest example. Secondly, I think there will be an effort by the Trump campaign to lean into the issues that I just mentioned, plus others between now and November. It's a strategy that they consider to be tried and true. The president talked about immigration. He talked about abortion. He talked about guns back in 2016, and it worked for him then. And for some reason, despite changing political landscapes and a completely different environment in this election, a lot of his advisors are telling him that it'll work once more. And so I do think that you'll start to hear more about issues, potentially the transgender athletics issue. Definitely you will hear more about abortion. It's something that the president's campaign is really prepping to talk more about. He was in Ohio and he was talking about religion and how, I think he said, Joe Biden would be bad for God. Can definitely expect to hear more rhetoric like that between now and November.
It's so long, but so close. Gabby, thanks so much for talking. I really enjoyed this article and this conversation has been great. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Eugene.
That's it for our show. You can read Gabby's wonderful but long full article at Politico.com. Also, on Saturday, President Trump laid out a number of executive actions, including a payroll tax deferral through the end of the year, extending unemployment benefits at a reduced rate with states now picking up 25% of the bill, renewing a moratorium on evictions during the pandemic, and deferring student loan payments and interest through 2020. top Democrats quickly slammed his actions. Senator Chuck Schumer said most states wouldn't be able to afford that quarter of those unemployment benefits. And Speaker Nancy Pelosi said a payroll tax cut would undermine Social Security and Medicare. Pelosi said, quote, "The kindest thing I could say is he doesn't know what he's talking about or something's wrong there. Something's very, very wrong there." But Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin said Democrats left the administration no choice because they refused to compromise. And so the battle over coronavirus relief rages on. And if you want the latest coronavirus news, check out our nightly newsletter. And every single Thursday, you can go to Politico.com and watch Foursquare, where me and three of our amazing journalists talk about everything happening in politics. I'm Eugene Daniels. Thanks for listening.